Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, shalom, everyone. I hope you're having a great day. This is Bill Cloud, and we want to welcome you to our program, Returning to Our Roots. Now, we have been discussing something I find to be fascinating, and that is Psalm 83 and some of the hidden things within Psalm 83. And in the previous program, we were discussing Israel, what Israel is, what it represents, and the fact that you and I, through the Messiah, being born again, we are part of this family Israel. And I want to say this again at the very onset. By no means am I suggesting we replace Israel. I do not believe in replacement theology, but I do believe in in-placement theology. And by that I mean we've been grafted into a tree, according to Romans 11, that is identified as Israel. We are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, according to Paul in Ephesians 2, meaning that we are now part of this family that God calls Israel. And as such, we should walk according to the instructions that God gives His people. We are to walk the steps that have been ordered for a good man. And when we do that, we can overcome the adversary by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of our testimony, and because they did not love their lives even unto death. Those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah are referred to as the remnant of the woman's seed. So taking all these things into consideration, it's important to understand who and what Israel is, what that all encompasses, that includes you and I, and to know that the adversary wants to destroy not just part of Israel, he wants to destroy all of Israel. He wants to destroy all of God's people. I want you to consider that before he was killed, Osama bin Laden hated Jews and people like you and me. He very quickly placed both groups into one category as his common enemy. And so it's interesting to me that the adversary can so quickly discern who his enemy is, but it's hard for us to comprehend sometimes that we're all part of a family that God identifies as Israel. So my point in all this is, in Psalm 83, it is Israel who the adversary, through Israel's enemies, wants to destroy, wants to wipe them off the face of the map so that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. And chief among these antagonists, it says in Psalm 83, are the tents of Edom and Ishmael, or the Ishmaelites. And that's interesting because both of these two personalities in Scripture, both Esau or Edom, because they're one and the same, and Ishmael, they share things in common. First of all, consider that when Isaac was born, or up until that time, Ishmael may have thought, I'm the one entitled to the birthright, I'm the one entitled to the blessing. But when Isaac came along and God told Abraham, through Isaac shall your seed be called, that means that Ishmael has to leave. And perhaps in his mind he's thinking, if it weren't for Isaac, then I would obtain all the blessings and the favor of Abraham. And then later on, when Isaac, by Rebekah, has two sons, Esau and Jacob, Jacob obtains the birthright and the blessing. And so Esau is so angry that he intends to kill his brother Jacob. And why? Because in his mind, Jacob has robbed him of what rightfully belongs to him. And so in other words, both these two personalities see Israel as being the one that has, they think, stolen from them what rightfully belongs to them. However, what we understand is that they hate Israel because they think Israel has something that was never theirs in the first place. And so there is this contention between Israel and specifically these two nations. And because of that, they lead the charge in wanting to destroy Israel. Now, my opinion is that Esau and Ishmael inherit this jealousy, this sense of entitlement and the willingness to destroy the one they think stands in the way of them inheriting it. I believe they inherit that from the adversary himself, because the Bible at least hints that the adversary from the beginning has thought that he was entitled to be worshipped as God. Let's read, for instance, in Isaiah 14, beginning to verse 13, the Scripture says, "You have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Now, many people believe that this is referring ultimately to the adversary, that he wants to be considered God. We know that at the end of days, the Antichrist is going to go into the temple of God and exalt himself above anything that is regarded as God. Now, the Messiah in Luke chapter 10 says this, and he said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. In other words, that would seem to hint to me that if the adversary has wanted to exalt his throne above the throne of God, if he wants to ascend into the heavens to depose God from his throne, this is why, in part at least, he was cast down. He descends from heaven like lightning. And so I believe, this is just Bill's opinion, that the adversary has this mindset that what belongs to the Creator should have been his. And because he despises the Creator and yet has no authority or power to depose the Creator, he goes after the next best thing. Those people that the Creator has decided and has delegated to work through in the earth, Israel, God's people. And so the adversary likewise works through people. And perhaps infuses them with the same thoughts, the same jealousies, the same sense of entitlement that Israel is the reason that you do not inherit the blessing and the favor of Abraham. And so they have this in common. But Esau, who is also regarded as Edom, and Ishmael have something else in common, and that is the third wife of Esau, Mahalat. This was the daughter, of course, of Ishmael, the third wife of Esau. And so in a sense, what Esau did was, and I believe this anyway, was to form an alliance with Ishmael. And so what he would have had to have done, is travel to Ishmael's abode, which was in the Arabian Peninsula, to take this daughter of Ishmael as his wife and to form an alliance. But when you look at her name, Mahalat, and you do a word study, there's some interesting things that that appear. Now, on the screen, I want to show you the root word from which we get the name Mahalat, and it is the word chala. And chala means a sickness or a disease. And so this is the meaning of her name, sickness or disease, which is kind of interesting, number one. Now, in Hebrew, there are a lot of these words have cognate words, or shall we say family words. And chala, sickness, is no exception. In fact, it's related to a word that we've referred to in times past, chalal, but which means defile, corrupt, or profane. But another related word is the word aleph, lamed, he. And that word means a curse. And that word in Hebrew is pronounced Allah. So in other words, Esau, who hates Jacob, goes to Arabia, to Ishmael's house, and takes one of his daughters, whose name means sickness, a word that is related to a word that means to profane or defile, which is also related to a word pronounced Allah that means curse. And so is this hinting at something? That Esau forms an alliance with his uncle Ishmael, and takes into his bosom a sickness, something that is profane, and something that carries the connotation of being a curse. In other words, what I'm hinting at, ladies and gentlemen, is I believe that Psalm 83 is not just something that pertains to times past. But the nations that were trying to destroy Israel in times past are the same nations that are trying to destroy Israel in our present day. Those that are listed in Psalm 83, with a few exceptions, are all related either to Edom, Esau, or to Ishmael. And so, it's, I think, extremely important for you and I to realize that the Scripture obviously is relevant for our day, but there is a lot more to it than what we've probably realized in times past. And the Scripture has things within it that is intended to help us better understand our day, and in so doing, help us understand what we're supposed to be doing in these days and times. Now, the psalmist tells us in verse 3 of chapter 83 in the Psalm, they have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. Now, we read to you from the New King James. The King James renders it hidden ones. Some translations rendered that as precious ones or even treasured ones. And so when you look at these terms, treasured ones, precious ones, hidden ones, sheltered ones, when you trace all that back to Hebrew, the term that is translated all these different ways in Hebrew is zefunecha. Zefunecha literally means hidden ones. Now, what do things like treasure, things that are precious, things that are sheltered, and things that are hidden have in common? Well, typically, treasure is hidden. Treasure is placed somewhere where not just anybody is going to find it. It's concealed. And if you've been tuning in for a few weeks with us, you know that we've been dealing a lot with the concept of concealed and revealed. Not only does God conceal a word, but at times we see in the scripture that God has concealed his people. For instance, Esther, in the book of Esther, she was concealed for a particular purpose. Joseph was concealed for a particular purpose. And that's interesting because the word zefunecha comes from the root word zafan. I want you to see that on the screen here. It's spelled zade, pe, and nun sofit, zafan. Now, the root word means to hide, to conceal, to cover, things of that nature. Now, what's interesting about this is the word zafan is the root word from which we get a name in the scripture, and that name is zafnat paneach. Zafnat comes from zafan, paneach. And if you are very familiar with the book of Genesis, then you should recognize that name because that is the name that was given to Joseph. When Joseph was separated from his kin in the land of Canaan, and he goes down into Egypt, and he works for Potiphar, and then, of course, you know, he ends up going to prison because of Potiphar's wife's accusations against him. And then he's summoned before Pharaoh. And then when he interprets Pharaoh's dream, they no longer call him Yosef or Joseph, but Zafnat paneach. He's given a name that conceals his true identity. And interestingly enough, this name is related to the term zafan, or as Psalm 83 renders it, zefunecha, your hidden ones. Joseph, of course, is going to be used as an instrument in God's hands so that all of Israel might be saved. And interesting to point out that when Joseph goes down into Egypt, he is, in effect, going into the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. Here's what I'm getting at. Joseph was hidden so that all Israel might be saved. When Joseph's true identity is revealed, that's when the two become one. Remember that when Jacob is preparing to cross over into the land, and he realizes that Esau is coming with 400 men, and quite frankly, I don't believe Esau's coming to kiss and make up, because if he was, why was he bringing 400 men with him? At any rate, Jacob he's alarmed, he's afraid, and he divided his company into two groups. And he says, now I have become two companies. And the reason he did that is because Esau, he's fearing anyway, if he finds them all in one place, he'll destroy them. So in essence, here's what Jacob does. He divides them into two, thinking that if one is discovered, the other will be hidden. And the ones who are hidden from him or concealed from him, they'll live. And when the danger passes by, what is he going to do? He's going to bring the two companies back together and make them one. So he won't be two companies anymore. He'll be one company. So what has all this got to do with you and me? Is it possible that on that cultivated olive tree in Romans 11, that there are natural branches and that there are wild branches is related to what we're talking about here? And is it possible that the reason it's been this way for so many years of history, because in part, had Ishmael known that there was a lot more to Israel than he first imagined, that he would have been trying to destroy all of God's people long before now? But isn't it interesting, in the days in which we live, there are those in the earth who would like to destroy not only our Jewish brethren, but would like to destroy anybody and everybody who identifies with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who identifies with Israel, who considers Israel our friend. I would contend it goes much deeper than that, but the point is that isn't it interesting that now these people that are related to Edom and to Ishmael and all these nations that want to destroy Israel, it doesn't say that they just want to destroy your people, but they want to destroy your Zephonecha, your hidden ones. In other words, throughout history, when it comes to our Jewish brothers and sisters, those who were keeping God's commands, they weren't really hidden. They weren't really concealed. If you knew what to look for, you could easily find them because they're going to dress a certain way. They're going to live a set-apart life. They're going to eat certain things, not eat other things. They're going to keep certain holy days, not keep other holidays. If you knew what to look for, they weren't really hidden. They were very plain to see. In fact, Adolf Hitler found 6 million of them. But if that's the case, then who is it that the Scripture is referring to when it talks about the Zephonecha, the hidden ones? Recall that in previous programs we talked about the fact that the creation is earnestly anticipating the revealing of the sons of God. And the sons of God are those who are led by the Spirit of God. And we defined all of that for you. But you can't reveal something unless it's first hidden. So might it be that the sons of God that are hidden and are to be revealed, it's synonymous with the Zephonecha of Psalm 83, the hidden ones. Is it possible that in turn is synonymous with the concept that we see in the book of Esther, this one that's concealed, only to be revealed on the third day, and through her all Israel is saved? Is it possible that that is in turn synonymous with Joseph, the one who is separated from his family, hidden among the nations, but on the third meeting or the third day, his true identity is revealed and he's no longer hidden anymore, but it's revealed, and that is how all Israel is saved in that day and time. And then in Romans 11, the tree that has natural branches and then the wild branch is grafted in. And as a result of that two becoming one, if you will, all Israel is saved. Could it be that all of these things, ladies and gentlemen, are related? In short, is it possible that in Psalm 83, it's saying that the enemies of Israel, mainly Edom and Ishmael, not only want to destroy those people who the world recognizes as Israel, our Jewish friends, but also wants to destroy those like you and me who are just coming into the realization that our identity in Messiah is as part of his family and people called Israel. And we are beginning to identify with Israel. We want to support Israel. And we are wanting to act like Israel, to keep his instructions and commands, to live that set-apart life. And if that's the case, then collectively, of the peoples that are in the earth, we pose the greatest threat to the forces of darkness and the agenda of the adversary. Because it is written that there is a people who will overcome the adversary by the word of their testimony, by the blood of the Lamb, and because they did not love their lives even unto death. In other words, I believe that we're living in the time when the Creator wants to take these two companies. Ephesians 2 puts it this way, circumcision and those who are regarded as uncircumcision. John chapter 11 refers to it as that nation and the children of God scattered abroad. He wants to take those two, and he wants to bring them back together as one. But the adversary does not want to see that happen. And so the adversary is going to try one last time to destroy not only your people, it says, but also your hidden ones. And so, ladies and gentlemen, it's, I believe, fascinating that in Psalm 83 we have this term, Zephonecha, hinting perhaps at those who are represented by Joseph. Let me share something else with you here. You remember that when Jacob was crossing over, about to meet Esau, that he took his wives and his maidservants and his children, and he put Rachel and Joseph at the last. And the Hebrew term there was acharon, which literally means at the end. And it is a term that hints at the end of days, meaning that of all the sons of Jacob, of all those who are part of the family called Israel, the last son to encounter Esau was Joseph, the hidden one. Interesting. And there are prophecies that we could read that talk about how that there is going to be a climactic battle that involves the house of Jacob, but also Joseph. And I believe personally that Joseph may represent you and me. Not saying that Joseph is an ancestor in a physical sense, no. But saying the types and shadows of what Joseph represents. Ultimately, Messiah Yeshua, who is the head of the body. But what pertains to the head is going to, in some ways, affect the body. I also want you to consider that that Psalm 83, it says, is a Psalm of Asaph. A Psalm of Asaph. And Asaph is a term that means to take away. And this is a term that is used at Joseph's birth when Rachel says that the Creator has taken away, Asaph, my reproach in regard to Joseph. There's another related word, Asif. Asif, that means an assembly or gathering back together. Remembering Jacob divided the group into two companies. He said, I have become two companies, but what is he going to do? He's going to gather them back together after the threat of Esau has passed. And also the word Yosef or Joseph is related to that word Asaph. What I'm getting at is there are some things in Psalm 83 that go beyond perhaps what we have thought before. Yes, I believe that these nations that are mentioned want to destroy the nation of Israel. They want to destroy our Jewish brothers. They want to destroy them. And we should stand with them. We should support them. Please don't misunderstand me. But in addition to that, I believe that these nations also want to destroy you and me. They want to destroy us because we are part of this family. Whether we recognize that theologically or not, I submit to you, the adversary, who knows the scripture a little bit himself, he can correctly discern who his enemy is. It's interesting to me, and this is just a footnote to all of this, that while you're watching this, we've just recently been going through a time in our country where there are those who are marching in the streets, and there's chaos, and there's violence beginning to break out. And these people who are doing this say they are inspired by the so-called Arab Spring that started in all these countries over in this part of the world where we've been referring to. It's an interesting concept. And I have to wonder if the people in this nation who are behind all this chaos and violence, I wonder how they feel about you and me, people who actually believe in the Scripture. So what I'm getting at is this climactic battle is taking shape, ladies and gentlemen. What we understand is this, that though those who are aligned with Esau and Ishmael and who want to see the destruction of Israel, we understand that the God of Israel is going to destroy them. That ultimately, he is going to overcome them. The Messiah is going to destroy the works of the devil in every way. I want to read to you from Obadiah. And it's in verse 6 and 7. It says this, "Oh, how Esau shall be searched out, how his hidden treasures shall be sought after. All the men in your confederacy shall force you to the border. The men at peace with you shall deceive you and prevail against you. And those who eat your bread shall lay a trap for you. No one is aware of it." So it's interesting to me that in this prophecy that is focused on how the house of Esau will ultimately be destroyed. And as a matter of fact, we'll read in here in just a moment how that occurs. But it says that your hidden treasures will be searched out. Because Esau sought to destroy God's people and God's hidden treasures. But that he is intended for Israel is going to be turned back on him. And so understanding that, here's what I want you to take away from this. That we're not describing something that's just going to affect a small group of people on the other side of the world. We're talking about something that's going to affect you and me. If we are in Messiah, we are the seed of Abraham. And we have a role to play in this. And let me leave you with this. In Obadiah verse 10, it says, "For violence against your brother Jacob," that is literally for Hamas against your brother Jacob, "shame shall cover you, and you shall be cut off forever." And verse 18 says, "The house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame. But the house of Esau shall be stubble. They shall kindle them and devour them, and no survivor shall remain of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken." And so, as I leave you, ladies and gentlemen, we see that ultimately the house of Esau is going to be overcome. But I want to submit to you that this war in which we're engaged, and this battle in which we're in the middle of, we're not going to win it with bullets and bombs. We're going to win it with prayer. We're going to win it by seeking His face and walking upright before Him to walk as His people. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come into the kingdom for such a time as this. And so, I hope you'll stay with me. I hope you'll join us next week. Until then, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.